Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
It's your chance to pose any questions you have about techie problems to our gadget detective. So any questions about your telly, your radio, your computer, your mobile phone, your video games and that sort of thing, our gadget detective Fevzi Turpak ought to be able to answer them. This is a question for Fevzi from Roy, who says, I have on my Mac for some time the Sierra update and has some time, as it's passed now, it's now okay to download, so I've left it on your advice in case of any glitches. Oh, that was more a compliment than a question. So I thought that was a question. I'll come on to that in a moment. But Andrew says, I have Windows 10. And I listen to Radio 5 every day on my PC, but it times out. Could you help me, please, so it will stay on? Is this a problem with Windows 10 or not? Fevzi, good morning. Before we begin to turn our attentions to all the texts and emails that have been coming in, let's take a call from Steve in Bristol. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, you're through to Fevzi. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I've got a question about the hard drive on my PC. The computer itself is about 8 years old now, and obviously I'm becoming a bit worried about the fact that sooner or later something's going to fail, particularly the hard drive. Yeah. I'm wondering if it's worth investing in an external hard drive so I can download what I currently have on my internal hard drive to an external hard drive should anything go wrong, so then I could buy a new internal and obviously reload what I had onto a new internal hard drive.
Yes, I mean, absolutely, Steve. First of all, you're right. At about 8 years, a physical hard drive with a rotating platter inside it, which is 8 years ago all that there really was, will be approaching the end of its life. We won't know exactly when. Some go after 5, some 10, some 15. But really, you know, you're starting to push your luck a little bit. So you should always, in any event, have a good backup regimen. Because even a brand new drive can fail or can be corrupted for any number of reasons, not least, you know, if you get certain types of ransomware infection and so forth, then you're reliant upon restoring from a backup. So, yes, you should always do that. I would say if funds allow, it's probably not a bad idea to. I mean, are you intending to keep the computer for a while, or do you think it'll only be another year or so, and then you'll move on to something else?
Well, the PC itself is, you know, fairly good spec. I've upgraded, you know, the graphics card, the memory, etc. So obviously, I've no plans to get rid of the PC itself.
In that case, I would say to you, in addition to buying yourself a backup drive, which you've correctly identified is a good way of backing up the internal contents, I think it's actually probably not a bad time to also, once you've sort of loaded everything over to the backup drive, to purchase an SSD, a solid state drive. That's to say a replacement drive, but one that has no moving parts. It will give you a number of benefits. One is it should outlast the rest of the machine comfortably by then, but also it will give that machine a real late mid-life kick, where it will boost its performance, particularly in terms of the time it takes to boot up and just the general snappiness of the drive. Now, a year or two ago, these were prohibitively expensive, but now, what's the capacity of the drive you've got at the moment?
750.
750. And how much of that are you actually using, you know?
Just over half.
I mean, I would say sort of an affordable option is something like a 256 gig, which obviously is less than half of 750. But you might well find that actually you don't need to have all of that. Is this a desktop or a laptop computer?
Desktop.
Desktop computer. Well, what you could do, if you wish to, you could either get a 500 or 512 gigabyte hard drive, and that would solve all your problems in terms of, you know, capacity, or if budget is an issue, then you can get a 256 and then keep that second drive as a sort of storage area for something like your music collection or your photo collection, as long as you have good reliable backups of that drive. It would be better to get rid of it altogether given its age, but still, I think it's time to start thinking about an SSD in there. And don't forget, if you do get another desktop drive, you can always take the SSD out of it and pop it in the new machine as well. So I think, you know, it's a good time to do that. Certainly the first step is the backup, because you need that. And then, you know, if funds allow and if you're so disposed, then a solid state drive of either around 512 or 256, depending on the approach you need to take.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, how much do you think how much should I be looking to pay for, you know, a backup drive?
That's the crucial question, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the backup drives are really quite cheap these days. I mean, because they don't have to. I mean, for that, you can have a rotating drive. It does, you know, you don't need SSD performance for a backup drive. So, you know, you could get something quite ample for, you know, £100 to £150.
Talk about 1 or 2 terabytes for that.
Oh, more than that.
More than that? More than 1 or 2 terabytes?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, drives are quite affordable now. I mean, the rotating drives have become quite cheap. And again, you can go for the larger form factor, so you don't have to go for the 2.5-inch size drives. You can go for 3.5, and it will give you more capacity and reasonable performance. What I would say is, if you do go for the backup drive, try and get one that rotates at 7200 RPM rather than anything slower.
Why?
Than that.
Why? What's the difference?
It would just give you more performance, which is not critical. But to be honest, it's not a big difference in the price.
Told me that ages ago instead of my wasting my money on other speeds. But Steve, thank you
it's
very much.
It's not a waste of money. But what I would say to you, see, the slower speeds are often used in circumstances where things like battery life is a concern. But if you're plugging it into the mains, it doesn't matter. You might as well get the performance boost.
Steve, thank you very much for the call. Steve in Bristol there, 0500 909 693. What's your question for Fevzi, our gadget detective, on issues of a techie nature, whatever it might be? Pick up the phone, give us a call, 0500 909 693, or get in touch via email, upallnight@bbc.co.uk, or by text on 85058. We'll come to Noel in Scotland in just a moment, but we've got to do this, Fevzi, haven't we? Come on, Fevz! Hey! What? What? Oh! Hot pants. What have they got to do with gadgets and techie stuff? Soul Brother number one is going on about it, Fevzi.
So, well, over in Las Vegas at the moment, they're running the CES 2017 show, which is the largest consumer electronics show.
No disrespect. Let's just get onto the pants.
In the world. Be patient.
Okay.
It's panting. I don't know. Anyway, right. a company called Spinelli Design has come up with a pair of hot pants, and indeed also in the form of jeans, if you're not so bold. And they connect, of course, wirelessly to your smartphone. And if you are running a sat-nav application on your smartphone, when it is time and you're driving and it is time to turn left or it is time to turn right, the appropriate part of the pant will vibrate to indicate left or right. So the advantage of this is that you don't necessarily have to have the voice on, which can be a bit annoying, and you have the pleasure of having hot pants or indeed jeans that will vibrate about your body at the appropriate moment. So
that will never catch on.
I have to say, this is invented in a country where they have far fewer roundabouts than we have. Because actually it's very difficult, because there's always a small lag between, you know, where it thinks you are and where you actually are. So, and if you're going around a fairly small roundabout where the exits are fairly close together, then it can be a bit late. So you need to look at the screen and you need to listen to the directions. And a buzz in your pants may not be fast enough for you.
Well, it may catch on. What do I know?
Well, it may do. I mean, it's certainly not unaffordable compared to a lot of gadgets. So the shorts start from £71 and a pair of jeans from £80.
It's no laughing matter.
frankly. You know, you can pay well over that for a non-Bluetooth pair of pants, although why would you want to?
Noel is with us, and you're in, is it Kieran Howe in Scotland?
No, it's Kirriemuir.
Oh, Kirriemuir, Kirriemuir.
Yeah, it's very famous for being the birthplace of Bon Scott of AC/DC.
Okay.
And also J.M. Barry.
Oh, as well.
Yeah.
In one tiny little place.
That's right, yeah, and on the edge of the Glens. It's very beautiful.
And do you stay young forever there?
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
Just wondering.
Peter Hot Pants, sorry.
No, nothing to do with Hot Pants. Wrong country, mate. Although
I did have a very beautiful girlfriend that used to wear Hot Pants.
Well,
I remember taking her to a T-Rex concert when I lived in Bournemouth, and that was fantastic.
Well, of course it was. What about you? Have you ever worn Hot Pants? Don't mind the ladies. What about you?
We can wear them as well. No, not exactly Hot Pants, but I have been known to wear quite short shorts.
I had some hand-me-downs as well. They were tight. You're absolutely right. It's supposed to be baggier. Anyway, let's talk about techie stuff. You've got a question for Fevzi. Go ahead.
Oh, right. Oh, hi there.
Hello, Noel.
Well, problem is, I text a friend in America quite often, and I was doing it through pay-as-you-go with O2.
Yeah.
And they were charging me 20p for a short text.
Mm-hmm.
So I went along to the shopping centre and to the 3 store, and I got myself a contract with a smartphone where I could go through the internet and send text that way. And it was going to be £11 a month,
mm-hmm.
which was going to be, I mean, I was spending about £20 a week on text. So it's going to be a lot cheaper doing it that way. And I think it's half a megabyte, which the guy said would be plenty to send, lots of texts.
Mm. As long as you're not attaching any images or anything else to those.
Oh, no, there wouldn't be any of that, no. But anyway, my friend has complained that she's been picking up bits of Greek and Scandinavian and stuff like that. So I wondered if that was to do with the fact that because I'm sort of like quite remote in Scotland, the signal's not very strong and the texts are taking quite a long time to get over there.
Well, text is interesting with text messages because of the way that they work. They can be pretty well instantaneous, or they can take several hours to arrive, and sometimes they don't even arrive at all. So, it's not really because of where you are. You've either got signal or you haven't, and once you've got signal, you're on pretty well a level playing field when it comes to that. I mean, what I would suggest to you, did you look at using third-party apps to send, so things like Skype, WhatsApp, Viber, all these sorts.
Oh yeah, I downloaded the guy in the shop downloaded it for me, WhatsApp.
Yeah.
So it goes through WhatsApp.
Okay, so that will work well. I don't know why your friend would be seeing foreign languages. That shouldn't be happening. I mean, it would be worth, I mean, as you've got the data, you can use it via any application. I mean, it would be worth trying the messaging within Skype, which is also reliable. The other thing to say is that WhatsApp has got a fairly unpleasant privacy policy in that they've recently changed it, because the owner of WhatsApp is Facebook, and they've recently changed it so that all the data that WhatsApp collects and used to benignly collect is now to be shared with Facebook. It's the subject of legal action in several European countries, and in fact the European court, I think, has handed down, I think it's $197 million fine to Facebook, because it apparently misled them when it wanted to buy it. They said no, they weren't going to share the information, and actually it was technically impossible. Well, it turns out that four or five months later, that's exactly what they're set about doing. So if that's of concern to you, because the way it works is that WhatsApp, and therefore Facebook, under the terms and conditions of the use of the WhatsApp app, you allow them access to your contact list. So even people who don't use WhatsApp or Facebook have their phone numbers logged by WhatsApp. And that's something of a privacy issue for a lot of people, because what they're able to do is effectively create a very in-depth map of who knows who and who contacts who, and it's this old word.
Oh, right, metadata. Yeah, so that I can see where that could lead to complications, yeah.
Well, the problem is with these services like Viber and Skype and WhatsApp is they're free to use, but nothing in this world is really free. If you can't pay for the product, you are the product. And in this case, it's not free. You're paying for it with your information. In fact, you know, the details of other people who may not even be in, you know, contact with you via WhatsApp or another app. So that's one issue. Whether Skype, for example, is any better, owned by Microsoft. Viber is popular in a lot of countries as well. I mean, I think it's worth, on this occasion, maybe worth trying Skype as well, because Skype has some real benefits. And don't forget, you can also make phone calls via Skype and so forth as well. So that'd be something worth thinking about if your data is sufficient. Do you have sort of internet access at home other than via your mobile phone?
No, I did have. I went into that in a lot of detail with a friend who's quite a boffin. And I got a computer set up and everything, and it got hacked. And so I got in touch with the supplier or the network. I think it was TalkTalk or something. Mm-hmm. And they got some boffins to take over the computer, and they said, oh, yeah, we can see that you've been hacked, and we can sort it out. Well, if it's simple, straightforward, it'll cost you about 40 quid. Otherwise, if it's complicated, it'll be about 300 quid. So I just binned the thing there and then.
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether you were talking to people who they claim to be, because that I don't know who you were talking to, but that modus operandi is also shared by a lot of scammers who...
I never thought of that.
Yeah, and this thing about allowing people access to your computer, that's really a no-no unless, you know... unless you trust them with your bank account, I wouldn't trust them with access to
your... I never do anything like that. If I do that online, it's only through a credit card. I've never put anything through a debit card.
But the problem here, Noel, is that if you've used that computer to make credit card transactions or access banking or shopping, and you've allowed someone access to that computer, there's every possibility that it was at that point that you were hacked. One of the main ways in which people trick other people into giving access to computers, telling them that they've been hacked, and then you allow them access, and then that's exactly what they do to you. So look, just a word. How long ago did this happen?
Oh, a couple of years ago now.
Okay, all right then.
And, I haven't used it since then, I've changed accounts and everything.
But you can... I mean, the point I'm getting at is that you might find that actually you get a lot more flexibility if you were to use a home internet connection and use something like Skype. On a desktop PC, and then use it on your mobile from time to time. How much are you paying for that half a gigabyte of data every month?
£11.
That's a lot of money for half a gigabyte of data. Are you getting a generous call allowance with that, or is it just data?
300 minutes.
Yeah, that's not a good deal, Noel. If you shop around, you can find much better than that. Is that a 12-month contract, or is that rolling 30 days?
No, 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
How long have you had it?
Only a week. A week.
You may... And did you take it out in a shop, or did you do it...
Yeah.
You might find that you've got the right to cancel under the terms, or not in law, but under the terms of the particular dealer that you took out the contract with. They often give you 14 days, and if you go to them and say, for example, that the signal's not as good as you'd hoped for, you can often hand back a contract. I would do a quick look around, okay? Use sites like moneysavingexpert.com, use uSwitch. There are others, many others that do similar. Just do a quick bit of price comparison, because I can tell you £11 should buy you about 8 times as much data and unlimited minutes.
Yeah, and do me a favour, mate. Leave my name out of it. Tell them that it was Fevzi Turkarp that told you to sell
to cancel
the contract.
Well, look, you know, if you've got the right to cancel it, and you can get something much better, than you should. And by the way, you can also speak to the retention team of the network that you're with. Tell them you're considering leaving the grounds.
So they might give you a better deal. Yeah. By the way, I've been looking this up, by the way, No. Let's. You still there, Noel?
Yes, still there.
I've been looking up Kirriemuir, and you're right. It is remote, by the way. It's it's north of Dundee for anybody who doesn't know, and towards the east coast of Scotland. The reason why I've been looking it up is what you said about your friend receiving Scandinavian texts and all that sort of stuff. I was wondering, and this just shows where, you know, my thinking is going, not being as techie as Fevzi, and I'm thinking, you probably can watch Scandinavian telly as well where you are then in that case.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. Well, I haven't got a television, actually. So
you can't even watch UK telly. Oh, well.
Never mind.
Right. Never mind. There's an opportunity there for somebody who wants to make a bob or two and give people in Northeast Scotland Scandinavian telly. I'm sure there is. Anyway, great to meet you. Thank you for
just
the call.
Just quickly, I've got the... What would I do with the phone? They gave me a new phone with a contract.
In principle, you can hand it back, but you'll have to see what their terms are.
Kiss it goodbye, mate.
Okay, but
thanks very much.
If you're not let me just give it to you as a hint. If you were to find that your signal was not what you expected, that would probably be your strongest argument for handing the whole thing back.
And Noel, thank you. Peter in Worthing in West Sussex is with us as well. Peter, good morning.
Good morning, Dalton.
You've got a question for Fevzi? Go ahead.
Thank you, Fevzi. I've recently had to buy another laptop, as my old one, which had a Vista operating system in it, suddenly decided not to come on one day. Mm-hmm. Now, this has got Windows 10 in it, and also Office 365 as a trial.
Yeah.
Now, basically, all I really need is to use Word. My old laptop, I think, had Word 97 on it. I've got hundreds of documents, which fortunately I saved on an external hard drive.
Yeah.
I've loaded onto the current new computer. Office 365 is for 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
It's then £60 to pay for 1 year.
Yeah.
Question is there anything that I can obtain to download on this new computer which will allow me to use Word and also to change and alter the documents which were on the old computer with the Vista system.
Yeah.
As I said, I think it was Word 97. Is there anything that I can download which will enable me to continue using Word, which is really a necessity, I must say?
Yeah, no, I understand. First of all, You shouldn't use your old version of Office or Word, because 97 right up to 2003 is no longer supported.
No.
They stopped support of Office 2003 at the same time as they stopped support of Windows XP, because it's the same generation of software. And what that means is that when critical bugs are found, that they're not going to be patched, and that means that it becomes insecure. So there's no point having a secure operating system if you're running a sort of substantially insecure piece of software on it. So that's the first thing. The good news is, well, you could go for Office 365, and for those that don't know what that is, that's a version of Office which is cloud-based. That is to say that the files that you create and review and edit are stored up on the servers of Microsoft, and the benefit of that is that you can then access those files from a variety of different machines, and it's also easier to do things like collaboration where different people working on the same document, that sort of thing. However, you could pay for a subscription. You could, if you don't need those benefits of cloud-based Office, you could still go out and buy a sort of standalone copy of Word. However, you could also use one of several free Office applications, so things like Liberty Office, for example, are totally free of charge. It is not Word, but it is Word compatible. That is to say, it can open Word files, including the older ones such as yours. It will allow you to edit them and save them back into a Word format. So that will be probably fine for your needs, unless it absolutely has to be Word and say Microsoft on it. These compatible Office suites are a lot of people use those permanently never see the need to go for Microsoft's Office. You know, in the old days, these suites were a bit ropey, but actually they're so much better now, and more fully featured as well. So I would say, you know, that's probably not a bad place to start, and then see how you go. And if you don't like it, then you've always got the option of going for a Microsoft product proper.
And that's got a uninstall button with it, has it?
Use Windows own uninstaller.
Yeah.
And it would uninstall in the usual way, or you could just keep it as a backup. If you later install Word, you could keep it as a backup as something that could, you know, edit. I've had instances actually where I've had trouble opening very old password protected Word documents in a current version of Word, but then I found some of these third-party suites have been able to open it because they ignore the password, because Word doesn't, well, at least at that time, it wasn't encrypting the files, it wasn't scrambling them, it was just password locking them. So actually there can be benefits to having a second Word compatible application on your computer, even if you do, you know, go ahead and buy Microsoft Word proper.
We'll come on to Nick and Edgeway in just a moment. Bear with me, Nick. But I did ask this question first of all at the beginning of the programme, and we haven't had an answer so far. Obviously, Andrew saying he's got Windows 10, listens to Radio 5 live every day on his PC, but it times out. It cuts out. Could you help him to make sure it stays on full time? Because, you know, there's this great presenter in the middle of the night called Dot and Ali Bio, and if he fades in and fades out, you don't get the full experience, you know.
Right. Just to be clear, it's the computer that's falling asleep, is that right?
Yeah, not Dot and Ali Bio. Oh, okay, right. Is this a problem with Windows 10, he's asking?
Yeah, no, it's not a problem as such. It's just the way that it's configured out of the box. So there's two different types of sleeping. There's sleep mode and there's hibernation. Sleep mode is where the screen goes off, some of the systems shut down to save power, but it can be quite annoying. So what you need to do is you need to disable or modify sleep mode. In Windows 10, you would hit the Windows icon in the bottom left-hand corner. You'll see a menu pop up. You can select on the settings. In the settings page, you click on the system icon, which is normally in the top left. And then when you go to the system icon, it will give you a list of things that you can change on the left-hand side. One of those will be power and sleep. You go to the section on sleep, and there's two settings, how the unit and when the unit goes to sleep, when on battery power, assuming it's a laptop or a notebook, and when it goes to sleep, when it's plugged into the mains. So it might say, for example, typically after 15 minutes of no activity and you're on battery, it would go to sleep, or after 30 minutes on mains, go to sleep. You can change those to say, you know, never, in which case it will never go to sleep, or you could just extend those times. But that's essentially how you do it. You select the times from minutes up to never on battery power and plugged into mains.
A subject that we're going to be taking up later on in the programme tonight is about cybersecurity and how to ensure the safety of children online. And that's a question you want to ask as well, Nick.
Thank you, Dutton, for letting me out, sir, or to talk to you even.
It's my pleasure, sir.
Thank you so much. I am completely ignorant of all computers. I'm over 70. I have a granddaughter who's 11. And with the technology as it is now, and what happens with technology, and we have a person who is so clever in technology, how can you make children safe from technology, or how can a parent find out if they are involved in that little thing without knowing about it?
Hello, Nick.
It's so easy to get onto a line and the parents don't know, but, you know, it's so scary it is with technology.
I mean, Nick, it's a legitimate concern. It's difficult to make a child completely safe. I suppose part of it is you said that this is your granddaughter and she's 11, did you say?
Yes.
So she's old enough to be taught about the risks of going online and for some basic...
Well, I used to have a recorder. They can do it even when they're 5 or 6. You know how children play.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's
they're so quick. When I was young, I suppose I was the same, but I didn't have our technology.
Yeah.
But how can parents know how they can be safe from the technology of the people against? If you understand.
I do, and so the first thing is to understand yourself what the risks are and make sure that the child or minor understands those risks. And so some of those are, to you and I, common sense, and they're involved in not giving too much personal information about oneself online. So people can converse in forums such as sort of social media websites, so things like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and so forth, and they can send messages to each other, they can send images and so forth to each other. And so the first thing is to impress upon them the importance of not giving maybe your full name, not giving your home address, not giving pictures of your house or...
But can I say one thing?
Sure.
If you've got a school friend, they talk to each other.
They do, yeah. And I think it's a little bit different when they actually physically know who they're talking to, because if it's someone that they know from school, then obviously one still has to be cautious, but at least you know they know who they're talking to. Sometimes you go into a forum, she thinks she's talking to another 11-year-old girl. She could be talking to a middle-aged man. She really wouldn't necessarily know. So the fact that things are not always what they appear to be online is probably a message that I think is worth trying to put across. The other thing is that it's incumbent upon the adult to learn about the risks and discuss these things openly with the child. But it is difficult because a third of internet users in this country are actually under the age of 18. And often they know more technically about services and apps and so forth.
They know 10 times more than me.
Well, they know technically, but they don't necessarily have the maturity to show the requisite degree of caution. And that's the thing. So
that's what I mean. It's the caution bit. What I mean?
So all you can do is you can lay down ground rules like don't make arrangements to meet anybody that you don't know already, via the internet. Don't give away too much information. And then work with the child and ask the child to show you what they're doing online. You know, see some of their messages. Now, it's true.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah.
Is there anything that the companies can do to really, really help?
Yeah, there are products. There are things like NetNanny and other similar products that try to...
I mean, the big companies, say you're with Apple or whatever company, is there something that they can say, if I've got a child, you could make your computer only go onto that line from that company?
Sure. So if let's say you've got an Apple device...
or whatever company. I say a company, but...
Yeah. Okay, but we'll take that as an example. So within the iOS operating system, you have got the ability to restrict the apps that an individual person uses without having sort of parental override. So there are things that you can do on mobile devices in particular, but there are also third-party software such as NetNanny that perhaps give you an extra tier of control. My feeling is that some of these things can be worthwhile, but they are not a replacement for actually engaging with your child, telling your child your concerns and what can happen online, and asking them to share with you, show you what they are doing. Now, it's true that a child could deceive an adult by, if it's a browser, by deleting the websites that they've been to so that there's no record of it. But then, you can look at that, and if the web history is gone, then that's suspicious in itself. But I think, it's down to parenting as much as technology. You can use technology, but it's also a case of educating yourself as to what the risks are, communicating those risks to your child, and engaging with your child as they use their device.
Just out of interest, and I really mean this for you, Nick, because when you tell me that you don't know how to use the internet, I'm thinking, gosh, you're opting out of a huge part of modern society, and it's so easy to get online and learn the few things that you need to learn to engage with your granddaughter in the way that you want to. And I want to suggests that maybe there might be a way. I don't know, Fevz, if you know the easiest route to coming to terms, getting to grips with the internet.
My granddaughter is in Scotland.
Right.
I'm in London.
But you know, you'd be able to speak to her every day.
No, I don't
face
even have
face.
A computer. But
you don't even need a computer.
Let me say one thing, please. Doesn't before a little tragedy has happened to me. I'm in my little flat and I'm quite happy. As lonely as I am, I'm happy. But I talked to my son and everything, and I think not only for me, I'm thinking about other people as well.
Fair enough.
And what I can do, because I can't do anything. I'm very safe with my son and that, and I'm sure he knows. I'm thinking of other people who don't know.
Fair enough.
And for those other people where maybe they have greater physical proximity to the young person, if as a parent or a grandparent you don't really know but you are concerned, one of the best ways of learning is ask the child to teach you. Ask them to show you. And in doing that, first of all, you will start to learn about the computers and the apps that they're using, but also you will start to get a sense of how they're using it themselves. You know, they'll give away something about how they're using it in the process of, you know, remarks or things that flash up on the screen as they're going. And if they try and hide something as it scrolls past, you know, that's a flag that you could maybe look into a little bit more. But actually getting your child or grandchild to teach you is an excellent way.
Yeah, it's just like when, you know, my old man learned where we used to bunk off to from school, you know. no, really, from that moment it was over. I was attending classes, of course.
Yeah.
It did. It's not nice.
Did he trick you into showing him?
No, I think he followed us, so that was it. And he caught my elder brother smoking a cigarette, and anyway. Yeah.
Well, in a way, you know, your search history is like that trail of breadcrumbs, isn't it? You can follow where a child or a young person goes. And some kids will delete their search history for that reason, or set up the browser to delete. But then, you know, that's a question itself. If you know they've been using the computer for the last week and there's no search history there, then the question is, why isn't there?
Paul in Newcastle, good morning. And Nick, thank you for the call, by the way. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Don. Good morning, Fevzy.
Hi.
Great show, Don, as ever.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Just briefly going back to the Microsoft Office question from earlier, mm-hmm. I use an application called OpenOffice, which I find excellent.
Very good. Yeah,
free of
good
charge,
recommendation.
And it's been going for donkey's years, to my knowledge. So I'd highly recommend that one as a recommendation. Anyway, my question, Fevzy, I've got a budget of about 400 quid. I'm a 45-year-old gamer, started in the days of the Spectrum and what have you.
Yep.
I've currently got a...
PewDiePie.
Sorry?
You're PewDiePie.
I'm what, sorry?
Ah, sorry, you're too old to know PewDiePie, aren't you?
Oh, do you mean Tweety Bird?
No, I mean PewDiePie, who earned $16 million from being a YouTuber, and all he does is review games.
Oh,
online.
God, no, that's the field of my 10-year-old stepson.
I know, but $16 million.
He's mad. It's something that bamboozles me.
$16 million, though, you can't knock it.
Yeah, I have an old, relatively old Intel i7 870, which mm-hmm. I believe is about, 5 years old or so. So pretty old in the general mix of computing. And the various 8 gig of RAM motherboard that goes with it. Mm-hmm. I've also got an NVIDIA 780 Ti graphics card, which has 3 gigabytes of RAM. But I have 3 24-inch monitors, which are all spanned together, running at a resolution of 5760 by 1080, which is rather huge.
Yeah.
A thing called NVIDIA Surround. What I would like to know is, to get the best performance from my system for gaming, predominantly games like Grand Theft Auto, Flight Sim, Driving Sims, that sort of thing, I'm finding that the 780 with its 3 gig of RAM can't drive my 3 monitors adequately.
No, well, you're,
so I'm thinking
you're pushing
of getting
your
something
luck
like an NVIDIA 1070, which is 8 gig of RAM, considerably more powerful than what I have now. My only concern is, would I get more benefit to hold on to the 780 for the time being and upgrade my existing processor, motherboard and memory? Or will what I've got now, given that in its day it was pretty high-end, would that drive the 1070 adequately to give me the performance boost I'm looking for.
Stop mucking about, Paul. Go and get a PlayStation, for goodness sake.
I've got...
Okay, I understand. Just remind me how old the motherboard is, Paul.
One, PS4, PS3. I've been a computer games man from the days of, since Clive Sinclair and what have you. I also, ironically, this may sound like a cop-out, but I've got digits missing on my left hand, so I struggle with a game controller. I know I could use a game controller with my PC, but I found keyboard and mouse, that's my sweet spot.
Okay.
I do like having my triple monitors, especially for things like racing simulators, flight simulators, and what have you. But obviously, I'm looking to get the best from it.
Yeah,
yes, John, I quite agree, though. A PlayStation would be a hell of a lot cheaper option. But hey, I'm bitten by the PC gaming bug, it would appear.
Yeah, and actually, you know, you can achieve a lot more with a PC
in
the round if you know how to pick your components. Paul, just remind me, how old is that motherboard?
The motherboard, well, it's a P55 based chipset, so I'm guessing that's about 5-6 years old, 30.
Yeah. So the thing is this. I mean, the biggest boost in performance, assuming that, you know, the machine was sort of evenly spec'd, that the money was distributed evenly across the different components at the time it was purchased, the biggest boost would be from a new graphics card. There's no doubt about that. Whether you would get the full benefit of the full graphics card is a question, because the infrastructure on the motherboard is something that you won't change. So there is a speed at which the processor can communicate with the memory. There is a speed at which data can flow.
The
motherboard.
If I can put it into context for you, Fabsy, I lower my resolution to 1920 by 1080, which is effectively one monitor rather than using all three,
yes,
it doesn't matter what game I throw at it, I can run it at high frame rates, no stuttering, runs beautifully. If I then increase the resolution to use all three monitors, the frame rate halves.
Yeah.
Which is telling me the graphics card is struggling rather than the processor. Am I right in thinking that?
Yes, but as you use more monitors and play at higher resolution, you're right. You're predominantly stressing the graphics card, but it's not only that. What I'm trying to say to you is just be a little bit cautious about expecting it to resolve everything. It will probably be good enough if you made the upgrade that you mentioned. It will probably be good enough. But bear in mind that you may find that there are bottlenecks then which are not the graphics card.
I appreciate, Febsey, if were I to go for the card, I would be putting off the inevitable.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering whether, you know, would I suddenly find a new lease of life from my 780 were I to change the board, RAM and processor for a more current gen setup? But I still think I would hit the bottleneck, which I've got currently, I believe, of my 3 gigabytes.
And as I've said,
cope with my resolution.
Yeah,
when I say 3 gig, I mean 3 gig on the graphics card.
I understand.
As opposed to on the PC.
Yeah, no, I get that. So the trick here is to try and spread the money evenly. It's not worth spending an absolute fortune on a graphics card when the rest of the machine is 5 years old, even if you boost the amount of RAM and the processor, because it starts to become more expensive than buying a new machine with the components that you want. I would say, the other possibility is if your motherboard will support it, is to add a second compatible graphics card and have them bonded together. That's another way of doing this, so that, you know, they effectively do parallel processing. The short answer is yes, you can go ahead to do that graphics card upgrade. You will get a significant improvement, and it should help you run the three monitors at the resolution that you've said. All I'm trying to point out is that you might not get the full benefit of that graphics card.
Paul, thanks very much for the call. 0500 909 693. So if you've got any questions of a techie nature, for Fevzi. Pick up the phone and give him a call. This is from Martin in Belfast, Fevzi. I'm about to purchase an indoor digital aerial for a TV monitor to run in my kitchen. Are there any particular considerations as to type or spec, etc.? That's from M, who says many thanks in advance.
Okay. So, first of all, you need to look at one of the parameters, which is the gain. That's to say, how much does it amplify the signal? An indoor aerial will rarely be as good as an outdoor aerial, so you should consider, if at all possible, getting a professionally fitted outdoor aerial. It will do better. The problem with indoor aerials is, although they have built-in amplifiers, they amplify the signal as well as the background noise. So you need something that's going to filter the noise. So you need a sort of a good well-known brand, and you need to spend a bit of money. You need to look at signal to noise ratio, and you need to look at the gain and try and boost each of those figures. I can give you one brand, but there are others. All for One, the people who are known for doing it's One for All. I beg your pardon.
Whatever it's called.
Otherwise, D'Artagnan will turn up at your door. Yeah. There are others, but the people who do those remote controls to control several things, they do a good range. And if you go towards the top end of their range, but there are other manufacturers that also do very well. But that would be maybe a starting point to start looking.
Yeah, I know about this because I had to get one for my father, who's poorly, as I've mentioned before on air. Yeah. And anyway, what I got, and it was from a company whose name I'd completely forgotten until Fevzi mentioned it just now, but other companies are available, including the Three Musketeers, of course. However, it was a kind of an indoor aerial that also works on the outside. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, your traditional aerial. It's just like a block of plastic, white plastic. And you can have it inside, you can have it outside, and it's rainproof on the outside. And I tell you, I've promised, old man's missus that I will sometime come with a long drill and put it on the outside. But I haven't put it on the outside, but it works really well. It works pucker in the inside. You've got to put it by the window, though. You've got to place it right and everything. But, it's brilliant. It looks brilliant. Yeah. I don't even know if I'm going to bother dragging up for an old drill to go and do it.
No, if it's working well enough, leave it alone.
Yeah, I would suggest, exactly.
If you've got a good picture, what benefit are you going to get by putting it outside?
And also, the lesson to be learned is, don't promise people that you're going to come and do their DIY for them, for goodness sake.
Yeah, and don't tell them you're going to come around with a big drill. They might get the wrong idea.
I'm not sure she would, but I see what you mean. William says, was wondering if I could delete photos from my iPhone without losing them from the iCloud. What do you reckon?
Yes, you can, but you need to be careful, because if it's set up to synchronize, then it will also delete from the cloud. So you have to break that link. I would back them up locally, copy them across locally by connecting the iPhone to a desktop or a laptop computer via the Lightning to USB cable. Mm. I'd do a complete backup that way. That's always a more secure way, because you don't ever really have full control over what's in the cloud. It's very easy to get those settings wrong and then find, as you're intimating, that it synchronizes by deleting what's on the phone.
Yeah, I should have mentioned this after we were talking to our reluctantly or technologically reluctant granddad. Alan in Northumberland says, I'm 58, always resisted any use of computers, but now I have to reluctantly accept that I have to have one. What would you recommend for a beginner like me?
Okay. It depends. Probably a laptop if you think you might use it in more than one location. Otherwise, save your money, get a desktop with a bigger screen. Get something with, say, an Intel Core i5 processor, 8 gigabytes of RAM, and an SSD drive of at least 256 gigabytes. I think that would be a good starting point. Probably you're going to be running Windows 10 on any new machine now.
Otherwise, you could start off with a tablet if you just want to play around and find out what...
Absolutely. Depends how you want to use it. Tablet, easier to get on with, but ultimately less flexible.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.